Always a pleasure to join you bright and early in the morning, Jim, and hopefully things are well in the lovely province of British Columbia.
Todd, we'll get to week two NFL in a second, but things are always lovely in BC. They've been lovely in Canada. It's been Bianca crazy for the last 4 days. What were her numbers going into the U.S. Open? I don't know if tennis is a sport where a lot of money is wagered, but what did she do for the better in the last couple of weeks?
You won't see a ton of money wagered on it. The U.S. Open, though, of course, one of the bigger majors here, probably slots right behind Wimbledon as far as prestige for folks in the States. And when you look at Bianca, given how well she had played since more or less bursting onto the scene in March, she was 20-1 when the odds opened for the U.S. Open, was actually bet down to about 12-1 before the tournament even started, and she was a major underdog against Serena in the Grand Slam final of a price of 5-2. So anybody who had the belief in the Romanian Canadian was able to take full advantage and line their pockets accordingly with her pretty impressive performance.
So you got paid then if you bet on Andreescu.
There is no doubt she paid a lot more handsomely than any of the big three would have on the men's side, because you look at the odds in comparison. Rafa Nadal was the third favorite behind Joker and Roger Federer, his price though widely available in that 5-2, 3-1 range, and he was a massive chalk going into the final against Daniel Medvedev, where you had to put up $5 to make one. So Bianca, much more lucrative for the bettors that saw that upset coming.
James, did you see that? I think there was a slight diss by Todd, the Romanian Canadian. Come on, it was a Canadian who beat an American.
That's fair. She did, and Serena has become the queen of tennis. There's a lot of angst down here south of the border where people want to know if she's going to be able to approach Margaret Court's record and eventually get over the hump. But I can tell you, not being a huge tennis fan myself and having watched probably from the round of 16 on in, I was definitely impressed with Andreescu and what she brings from a mental toughness standpoint to battle back in that second set in the semifinals against Belinda Bencic and not even see it go to a decisive third set. Spoke volumes for what she's going to be able to accomplish, assuming she stays healthy.
It's Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. Week number two in the National Football League. Okay, we've seen a small body of work from everybody. Get a sense of what we've got. It starts with the Thursday nighter tonight, Carolina, Tampa. Some are saying yes, it's only week two, but some might suggest that this is about as close to a must win for the Panthers as you're going to find. You buying that at all?
I think it's a massive game for Carolina. I really believe they were going to start their season with a victory. They were rather sluggish in the first half, but done in by a tip pass that turned into an easy 6 points for the Rams. You look at Cam Newton, really didn't stretch the field vertically. Christian McCaffrey, though, looks every bit the part of the best, most complete running back in the National Football League, running between the tackles and catching the ball out of the backfield. Meanwhile, this is a Tampa team with Jameis Winston, 3 interceptions last week, 2 of which resulted in sixes. So we'll see if Carolina can take full advantage there. I would definitely say that Carolina needs this game. Tampa, of course, doesn't want to start in an 0-2 hole, but not quite the same expectations for Bruce Arians' bunch as what Ron Rivera is being put under the magnifying glass.
Todd, you never want to use the term guessing when it's about wagers, but going into last week, there were several star players of the NFL that really hadn't touched the football in the preseason. For the Lions in week two, does everyone feel a little more comfortable that they have a little bit better of an idea of what you're seeing rather than the first game of the year?
It's definitely become more challenging trying to wrap your head around week one, Perry, when you know that most of the stars, whether they be on the offensive or defensive side, haven't taken significant reps or even any reps as part of the preseason. So it's changed a little bit. Bettors have looked to try and gravitate towards unders. They weren't really rewarded for that. But you see the guys that are out there and feel more comfortable running their offensive schemes really benefiting from it. So it'll be curious to see how those philosophies look for week one next year. But once you have that first full 60 minutes under your belt, I think you kind of go, all right, we know what we're going to get from a lot of these teams. And by the time we get through week two and week three, we have a much better grasp in terms of identity for all 32 football teams.
It's Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. I guess the team that had quite a reality check, or maybe it's just a one-off. But the Cleveland Browns, man, like they were the sexy team for everybody over the last 6 months to talk about, year two for Baker, OBJ's now into the fold, and they got thumped. I mean, they got absolutely dominated by 30 points by the Titans. And here they are, still favored by 2.5 against the Jets going into the Monday night. There's a prime time. Like, a lot of people are going to be watching on this one. What do you make of the Browns? I think we talked last week, and you said, I'm not buying what these guys are selling. And I guess you were right on this one. But yet, Vegas still seems to like these guys a bit.
And I'm still not buying the Browns right now. I watched enough undisciplined football from them against the Tennessee Titans.
18
to lead me
penalties!
To believe, you can't just correct this in 1 week. The penalty yardage was off the charts. This is still a franchise that in their last 32 road games is 3-29 straight up and 6 games under .500 against the spread during that span. But keep in mind for the Jets, a few key injuries you're going to want to pay attention to. C.J. Mosley left the game late in the third quarter against Buffalo, and you saw that defense really crater as Buffalo went on 2 long touchdown drives to win that game 17-16. And Quinnen Williams, the rookie out of Alabama on the defensive line, if he's not available, changes a lot of what the Jets will want to do. But when you have a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., who's ultra-talented and is a fun watch, saying, you know what, he doesn't care, he's not taking off his nearly $200,000 watch to play football, that tells me these guys' heads aren't focused on winning football games. They're all over the place where they don't need to be. So I have some real reservations, and if Cleveland doesn't win this week against the Jets on Monday night, the schedule does not get any easier. There's a very real chance this team could start 1-6 and crater quickly.
Todd, the number that everyone's talking about, and it's almost comical, and I think in previous conversations last year, you always said, man, I don't go near numbers that are that big, but you know, you can find it 18.5, some at 19, New England against Miami. What do you suggest about that? And is that the highest spread that we see for a road team? How far back are you going to go? Do you know that?
This is a big, big number to try and see in the NFL. It's actually the largest point spread since the Broncos took on the Jaguars back in 2013, where the Broncos were nearly a 4-touchdown favorite, and the largest point spread since 2007 for a team on the road when New England took on the Baltimore Ravens, laid nearly 3 touchdowns, and only won that game by a field goal. New England has historically struggled against the Dolphins down there in South Florida, whether it's the nightlife, whether it's the heat, a variety of elements that can make that trip a little more daunting. But typically New England plays an NFL-caliber football team, not a one comprised of high schoolers or something close to it at this point. But this is a game that I'd want no part of. With a price this large, it would be Miami or pass. We know the Dolphins were embarrassed to the tune of 59-10 last week against the Ravens. A lot of familiarity between New England and this coaching staff for the Dolphins. So you have to wonder, if they build a 2, maybe 3-touchdown lead, do they get vanilla? Do they try and run the football and just get out of Dodge? I can't see a scenario where New England is comfortably outside this number and you're not constantly sweating the back door over the final 10 to 12 minutes of regulation.
Todd Furman for the Bet the Board podcast here on Sportsnet 650. Seahawks fans all across Metro Vancouver in and around the region might be looking at this one against Pittsburgh this weekend. Seahawks almost 5-point dogs going onto the road after Pittsburgh was handled rather handily by the New England Patriots. Maybe New England's just that good. How do you see this one?
I see a bounce-back spot for the Steelers, who okay. Over the last 10 years or so, when they lose a game by 10-plus points, follow it up going 11-6 straight up and 11-6 against the number. I don't want to hit the panic button for the Steelers yet because I think New England is that good, both on the offensive and defensive side. But there is a troubling trend starting to emerge in Pittsburgh, and it's the fact the last 2 times we've seen them, week 17 against the Bengals and week 1 against New England without Antonio Brown, there is no threat of a vertical passing game. Yes, Juju Smith-Schuster had 6 catches for almost 80 yards. Dante Moncrief said it was the worst game he'd played in his NFL career as a receiver and vowed to bounce back. But they need to show some of that balance. They need to go out there and make plays. This is a Steelers team that's top 10 against the run or has been since the beginning of last season. And when you look at Pete Carroll's comments, he said, we have to be better running the football. I'm not sure this is the kind of team where you want to run to the teeth of the Steelers defense. And the Seahawks fans have to believe they were very fortunate to get a win against the Bengals. They were outgained by more than 150 yards. The yardage disparity between the Seahawks and Bengals was the second most of week 1, behind only the Ravens and Dolphins. So let's see what we get from the Seahawks. Some optimism, though, about that defensive line. LJ Collier upgraded, expected to be out there. Ziggy Ansah hopefully makes his debut. And Jadeveon Clowney's only going to get more comfortable on that defensive line. But I think this is must-win territory for the Steelers. And if the Seahawks were to lose traveling across the country, wouldn't really hit the panic button by any stretch.
A lot of fun matchups in week 2. A lot of eyes on the Saints and the Rams get at it again. What do you see there?
And this is a game where you've already seen professionals kind of make their position known. The Rams opened as a 3-point favorite, down to 2.5. Over-under has ticked down a little bit from 54 to 52. Short week for New Orleans. Pretty fortunate to get the win on Monday Night Football against the Houston Texans. You look at the way Houston attacked with a vertical threat passing game, really leaving Marshon Lattimore alone. But anywhere that PJ Williams or Eli Apple were out there, that's how they tried to make plays. I look at this Rams team, a healthy complement of receivers, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and of course Brandon Cooks. But some concerns still in the ground game. We saw Malcolm Brown as the viable red zone threat. First time Todd Gurley hadn't taken a carry in the red zone as a member of the Rams since way back in 2016, week 13, actually. So this Rams team, a little bit different. I think they were somewhat fortunate to get a win on the road at Carolina, but the Saints have had this game circled for quite some time. I wouldn't be stunned whatsoever if New Orleans wins this game outright.
Before we wrap things up, those footsteps you're hearing in Vegas for your beloved Golden Knights are coming from the Vancouver Canucks. Give us a sense of, as training camp opens today for the Canucks and several other teams across the NHL landscape, where do the future odds sit right now for Van City here on September 12th?
Well, to put in perspective how odds makers feel about the respective cities, the Golden Knights are a $7 favorite to make the playoffs, meaning you have to put up $7 to make $1 coming back. The Vancouver Canucks' fortunes, not so rosy an outlook. They are 9-5 underdogs, meaning that if you put up $1, you get $1.80 coming back as far as just making the postseason. When you're looking at the odds to win the Stanley Cup, the Lightning and Golden Knights, respective favorites in their conferences, and we look further down the odds boards, Vancouver about a 40-1 shot to bring home Lord Stanley Cup. But that is a far cry, gentlemen, from the four teams picking up the rear in the Red Wings, Ducks, Kings and Senators, all priced at 200-1 to win the Cup. And if you're looking at actual division odds, I'll make the claim now, and I'll beg for you guys to differ, that the Pacific Division, top to bottom, is the worst in the NHL. Golden Knights, an even money favorite. The Sharks priced at 9-2, Flames at 4-1, and every other team there 12-1 or greater to win the division. The good thing for the Canucks is they're in that third tier, well above the fourth tier, picked up by the Oilers, Ducks, and Kings. All 20-1 or higher. If you believe in miracles, the Los Angeles Kings, 100-1, your return on investment.
St. Louis.
Telling me there's a chance.
Last year, there's a chance. There's a chance.
Well, that story, gentlemen, was a little bit different. That was a Blues team that was in the middle of the pack, whose win total was respectable coming into the campaign. They just bottomed out and went from worst to first. But we'll see what happens. It's always interesting when you look at the West. I think it's much more wide open than what we're going to see in the Eastern Conference, where it really becomes a who's who. Whether you're going to make a case for Tampa as the favorite, you're going to gravitate towards a team like New Jersey, who will inevitably be healthier and had some key additions. Should make for some very compelling hockey. No reason to believe Vancouver can't sneak themselves into that 7 or 8 seed line as one of the wild cards and maybe have a chance in a West that appears to be quite wide open, at least for right now.
Todd, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it as always. We'll catch up again next week after we make some money on what you advised for Sunday.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Enjoy the games this weekend.